So thank you very much for coming back once again. So the sanskara of attachment means we get attached to things, people, places, beliefs, ideas, images, memories. The deepest attachment is to memory, a memory of something. And so the attachment, it can be for 10 seconds, it can be for 10 hours, 10 years, perhaps even a lifetime. Perhaps even a lifetime. And we know that when we get attached to anything, if something happens to the object of attachment, then it feels like it's happening to me. And that's why we take things personally. And the behavior is a reaction. Because when something happens to what I'm attached to, that's the moment I create the energy of emotion. And emotion, energy in motion. And when we become emotional, the cause, the underlying cause, is always the ego. Yeah. The ego, in a sense, is illusion. Yeah. I'm deluding myself when I identify with something I'm not. And then that leads to emotion. So ego is Maya's throne. It's Maya's throne, basically. From the ego comes this flaring of energy, this emotional energy, a little bit like the sun. You've seen these close-up pictures of the sun, and you see the energy flaring out from the sun. And it flares out for thousands of miles, and then the flare dies back. A little bit goes off into the universe, and most of the energy dies back into the sun. And so if you notice, when you become emotional, there's a flaring of your energy, the energy of consciousness. But emotion cannot last. It cannot stay. It always passes. It always comes back. The energy comes back and you reintegrate the energy. Yeah, a little bit goes off into your relationships, but most of the energy comes back. And you settle down. You calm down. You come back to the center. You become centered. And in the center is your true nature, your natural state of being, your trueness, which is peace, which is loving, which is joyful. And that's our nature. And it's natural to be in that state. But that's quite difficult for us to imagine and very challenging for the world out there, because emotions have been present, created for so long now, that everyone is addicted to their emotions. It's like an addiction. That's why if you make a movie in Hollywood where everybody's very peaceful and they never lose their peace, they're very loving to everyone around them. Isn't it lovely day? Aren't you lovely? I'm lovely. We're all lovely. And we're very happy, very content. And they make a movie around that. Would you go and see that movie? Would you pay to see that movie? When everybody's going, yes, yes. Not many people would, because they're addicted to the emotions that the movie triggers in their consciousness. Yeah. And that's why we're now what's called emotionally confused. We're confused about what's an emotion, what am I feeling, why am I feeling, where is this coming from? And yesterday we did the main confusion, where excitement is confused with happiness. You know, we learn to believe that excitement is happiness. And then the teenager and the mother, the teenager is 10 minutes late. The mother says, "You're late. Why are you late? You didn't call. You said you'd call. I've been so worried about you. I've been so worried." And the teenager says, "Stop worrying. Why are you always worrying?" And the mother says, "I worry because I care." And in that moment, the mother teaches the child, another emotional confusion, the confusion between worry and care. So worry is fear, and care is love. And they're the opposite end of the spectrum. But we learn to believe that worry, to worry, is to care. To fear is to love. And then we learn that it's okay to worry. So we spend the rest of our life worrying. And then we have to tell other people how worried we are about them. Otherwise, we worry, they might think we don't care. Funny, isn't it? Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. You laugh when you see it. And of course, the energy starts out as care, but then it gets distorted into fear. And what distorts the energy? Attachment. The attachment to the teenager. The mother is not loving the teenager, they're attached to the teenager. So someone asked a question yesterday. I have it here actually. It's a very good question. It's a very good question. And it goes like this. After there is this realization, how would I respond when either my wife or my friend or child says, I love you? Should I say it back, or would that be interpreted the wrong way? I love you. What are all the movies about, darling? I love you. Do you love someone? And so when you love someone, is it love or is it attachment? When you say I love you, is it love or is it attachment? Only you know. Only you know. And in the moment you say I love you, it might be you're giving love, but 2 seconds, 2 minutes, 2 hours later, when they don't do exactly what you want, it's obvious that I don't love you anymore. At least for another hour. And then I might love you again. For a little while. Until you don't do what I want. And so can love fluctuate like that? So, for me, it's not I love you, but what would I say if I really understand? What would it say in the script in the movie? If they really understood love, they would probably say, not I love you, but I am love for you. I am love for you. Do you see the difference? So it's the realization that love is what I am. I don't need to get it from you, and I'm available for you. I'm available to you. You know, sometimes when families have a member of the family who's perhaps becoming a little addicted to some drug or some substance, and the family, they believe that they are there to help the drug addict, the substance abuse, to help that person out of their addiction. And then when they try to help, they say, we're helping you because we love you. But the person who's addicted just gets worse and worse and worse. In fact, the more you try to help them, the more they go towards their drugs. This happens a lot in the world today. Now, what does love do? Love doesn't try and fix the other person, doesn't try and rescue them. Love says, look, I understand you're on your journey. It's your journey, not my journey. If you ever need help, support, wisdom, insight, care, I am here. I am available for you. I'm available for you. But I'm not here to interfere with your journey, with your life. That sounds easy theory. But when it's a member of your family to whom you are very attached, then it's easy to use the word love and forget that it's not real love, it's coming from attachment. Which means I'm identifying with the journey of the other. And as they sink down, I'm sinking down with them on their journey. I go, oh my God, you can't go down there. And if I go down with them, then we both need someone to bring us up. So this is why love doesn't interfere, but it's available. I'm available if you need, if you ask, if you request my help. So it's very interesting. Not I love you, but I am love for you. Which means whatever you do, it's fine. I'm not affected. The moment I'm affected by what you do, it's not love, it's not care. It means I am attached to you. And that's why the script should read not really I love you, it should really say I'm attached to you. And that's why you have the romantic comedy, you know, the romantic comedy, the stories, and 1 minute they're very, oh darling I love you, next minute they're fighting and they're arguing, the next minute one has left, they've gone off with someone else, and the next minute they're coming back again, and the next minute they're making up again, next minute they're arguing again. And during the whole film, our emotions will go from, oh my God, oh, he's sorry, oh, don't leave, oh, isn't that lovely? And at the end of the movie, they walk off into the sunset. It's the perfect ending. It's love personified. And we've got tears rolling down our eyes. And we turn to our partner and we say, darling, why can't our relationship be like that? And so we take in all these images, all these moments, and this is where we learn to create our beliefs about love. And it's way, 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 way off the scale, as they say. So it's quite challenging to untangle this thing called emotion and this thing called feeling, because we feel our emotions. When the emotion flares, we feel it for sure. And so the instability of emotion confuses us. It confuses us. And it makes it difficult for us to be the masters of our consciousness, to be the master creators. Because as we started with in the first day, I'm here to create my journey, to create my life, to create my vision, the quality of my decisions. But as long as I become emotional about anything, it sabotages my creativity. And that's why we have spiritual practice. Meditation, which means detached observation. Study, which is contemplation, which means understanding how I create the emotion. You know, the application, practicing every day to stay in my peace, to stay in my power as I meet the drama, people, as it comes to me. Every day. Hundreds of opportunities to do that. So, I think you can see all the connections now. I think you see all the connections. So, just before we begin our session this morning, any questions? Any questions? Yeah, I just need to get you to shout a little bit. Blood relation, yeah. Yeah, it's when you have to sit afterwards and say to yourself, oh, I lost the plot, I got really upset with my wife or my children, and then you sit afterwards and you process it. Sometimes we call it processing, and that's fine. But yes, it's a sign that in the actual situation, I was still reacting, therefore there's still an attachment, there's still something I need to let go of. And in family situations, it's the most challenging because the deepest attachment is to, as you say, blood relation. And so the essence of what we're learning here is to raise our vision of our blood relation from you are my blood relation to you are just another soul on your journey. You're not my blood relation, you're just another little point of light on your journey, and we just happen to be journeying together for a little while, falling into the belief that you are mine and I am yours, and then we fall asleep in that belief, and then when you don't do what I want, then you get angry, and then one day we wake up, ah, you're a soul and I'm a soul, we're on our journey, and someday we're going to go like that, naturally, and it's okay, it's fine, when I have that vision of the other, and that's just a spiritual vision. But the hardest workshop to have and maintain that vision is in your own family, the physical family. That's why surgeons are not allowed to operate on their own family, because they're not detached enough to make the right decisions which are not skewed by emotion. You know? That's why they say never make life-changing decisions when you're emotional, because usually they'll be wrong or take you in the wrong direction. Not wrong, but they'll take you off in not an accurate direction. And the most common decision we make when we're emotional is, darling, will you marry me? Yeah. And then 2 hours later, did I really say that? Did I really? Oh no, surely not. Because the emotion dies down. And I go, oh no. So I'm joking a little, but I think you know what I mean. Anyone else? Any other questions? Yes. Yeah. When you leave your addiction to the emotion, okay, there's a blank, okay. Well, actually, there isn't a blank. You can't just leave the addiction. It's a great question, actually, because it brings into the arena is how do I free myself from the past karma of attachment and the resulting emotional recordings that I have in my consciousness. And there's a whole industry in the world out there which has grown to meet the needs of people who want to free themselves from the past karmic emotional recording. So this might go back to early childhood, or it might even go back to previous lives. So you get past life regression, you get inner child therapy, you have hypnotherapy, and all of these essentially are to help you to release the subconscious attachment to the memory, the attachment to something that's generating, triggering the emotion into your consciousness right now. So you're hypnotized, you go back and you see and you either relive it and release it, or you re-experience it and release it, various ways. So for me, all these therapies, they have a role to play. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. If you have an emotional addiction, it means you keep repeating the emotion, the sadness, the anger, the fear. You keep recreating it because of the past karma action of getting attached and then recording that attachment. And so now you've got it recorded deeply in your subconscious, and it gets triggered by things outside. So up comes the wave of emotion. And in fact, some people are so sad, they like to be sad. They're addicted to the sadness. They've had the sadness come up so much, their sense of identity is based on, I'm sad, I'm a sad person. And it's like, it's just this mood they're in. And so this is a kind of addiction. And so when it becomes so severe for some people, not everybody, they go looking for a therapy to help them, to free them from this suffering. And that's why there's many therapies. And some are really effective for some people and not for others. Now, why is spirituality not a therapy? Is that what Baba's teaching us is that if you just taste your original state of consciousness, soul consciousness, then the power of realization that releases, it helps you to release the subconscious attachment to the illusion upon which the suffering was originally based. Now remember that all suffering, ego, is the moment you become attached to something, that must cause suffering. Yeah, so it's an illusion. I create an illusion about myself, and as a result I suffer. And I can suffer from many births, because the creation of the illusion becomes a sanskar. Yeah, it just becomes a habit. So the ego becomes a habit. Are you okay? Do you get that? Now the ego is an illusion about myself. And after a while the illusion becomes so powerful, it's creating so much emotional storms and unhappiness. I go searching for some relief. Some people go to therapy. Some people go to meditation. Some people go to spirituality. And so here you are in your spiritual journey. And the essence of this spirituality is, for me, taste, see, realize the truth of who I am. Spiritual being, the soul. Or no one. Nothing. No thing. I have nothing, I am no one. When you realize that, then the illusions that you've been creating become what they are. You see them as an illusion. I now see that to get angry about the car being damaged is me creating an illusion about me. It's just the car comes and goes. I'm here, I'm not the car. The truth is, I am the I that says I am. Finish. And once I've realized that truth, I end the sanskar of identifying with anything that I'm not. But I have to taste that again. I have to taste, truly, truly realize this is what I am, which is no one. Or nothing. I am no thing. Not nothing, but no thing. Yeah. But we've spent many births, do it again, taking the things, attaching, identifying. We've been creating this illusion about ourselves in a thousand ways for many, many births. So it's a very deep sanskar. Yeah. And that's why we sit for yoga. Connect, self-realization, and then I take that help. I let that power, God's power, come in and really stamp, you are just like me. You are just like me. Free, attached to nothing, totally peaceful, undisturbable. Just like me. Yeah. And then you don't have to work on all the different situations in the past where, you know, your mummy criticized you. And, oh my God, I'm a terrible person. And so I've got an image. I'm terrible. Mummy said I'm terrible. And so every time I hear the word terrible, I get upset. And so for the rest of my life, the word terrible is a trigger for my suffering. Because there was one moment when I was very small and someone said, you're terrible. And so what is therapy? Therapy is to go back, re-experience that moment, re-perceive it, and release it. In essence, some therapies, not all. But you don't need to do all that. How many experiences would I have to do that with? So many. And Baba's saying, just come back to be yourself. Just be yourself. Be yourself. Be yourself. Which means, notice when you are not being yourself. And the signal that you are not being yourself is emotion. That's the signal. That's the moment you get a signal. I'm feeling irritated. I'm feeling a bit angry. I'm feeling upset. And so I need to be able to read my own feelings and then remind myself, who am I? Soul. Just the soul. Just the self. Just the me. Just the I that says I am. I want nothing. Yeah. I desire no one. I'm totally free. Does that make sense? See the difference? Therapy and spirituality? In essence, it's a little bit more than that. Does that make sense? You get? Yeah? Good. Anyone else? Anyone else? Yes. Yes. A lot of people suffer from depression, yes. And people around them put a great deal of pressure on them to do something about it, yes? They don't have the energy, the initiative inside to do it. I know this, yeah. Do I have experience in introducing this model to people who have depression? I do actually, and I've been doing it for the past 2 days. I can tell by your faces. And no, I'm joking a little bit. In one sense, we're all depressed. Yeah. And you know, if, like Daddy Gulzar, I don't know if you were there for the conversation between Jenty Ben and Gulzar the other day. I mean, it was a kind of delight to watch the energy between them. And I got a real sense, you know, of what the consciousness of the deity is like. You know, this innocent joyfulness, this lightness, and almost in total contrast to Brahma Kumaras and Kumaris. And that's because for me that is that all attachment must result in a sense of loss, because whatever we get attached to must eventually either be taken away or disappear. People, situations, money, whatever. And whenever something's taken away that you're attached to, you must create a feeling of sadness. That's where sadness comes from. Sadness comes from loss. And if I try and make anything mine, sadness is inevitable. So many moments of sadness, which are then pushed down inside, they become heaviness. And that heaviness, that burden of karma in our consciousness, is essentially what depression is. Depression. If I keep my finger here for 10 seconds and I take it away, there's an impression, but in 10 seconds the impression is gone. But if I keep my finger here for 2.5 hours every day for many years, eventually that impression becomes permanent depression. Now, in America there's something like 250,000 children who get Prozac every day between the ages of 8 and 12. I think it's 50,000 children in the UK. And the reason is, they're diagnosed, rightly or wrongly, it's another story, the pharmaceutical companies have an interest, but they're diagnosed with clinical depression. And the reason is quite clear, they know, they've done the research. By the age of 12, these children have seen something like 10,000 deaths and 18,000 acts of violence. Children today, where do they see that? Movie, video games, their iPods, and all those places now where they watch stories of other people losing their life, their property, their reputation, everything. So they're watching. And as you watch the movie, remember yesterday, what's happening in the movie is happening to you, because you identify. So they learn to identify with the losses of others at an incredible speed and quantity. So that's why you have more people growing up with lots of moments of sadness, loss, sadness, loss, sadness, loss, sadness. The sanskar of creating loss, sadness, loss, sadness, loss, sadness. And suddenly you've got an incredible heaviness in consciousness. In some, not in everyone, but in some. So this is one of the reasons why WHO said about 5 years ago, the biggest killer in the world in 20 years will be depression. Yeah, it's not that the depression kills you or your body, but the depression affects your immune system, and then whatever gets into your body, that kills your health. So it is an issue. But for me, we're all a bit depressed. Not all the time, but we go into those troughs because we're all addicted. When you're addicted, you have highs, and when you have highs, you must have lows. And then the highs get harder to sustain, and the lows get lower and longer and harder to get out of. That's why Hollywood makes more shocking movies, and why the sports industry tries to put on bigger events and bigger spectacles and bigger this to try and get your attention, and they need to give you more drug to get you to be higher and higher. When you've sorted yourself out and you've become detached, do you not leave some kind of void in your relationships? Many people interpret detachment as I stand back, I don't care so much, I might avoid, I might not engage. But the truth about detachment or non-attachment is the opposite. It's like a paradox. You become more available. You become more caring. Because when you're attached, you're not really caring about others. You're caring about what you can get from others, which really means you're busy with yourself, with you wanting to feel better. Whereas when you're detached and not dependent on others in any way, that's detachment, then you're much more open and more available to give of yourself to those around you. So they feel the opposite. They feel the opposite. Yeah. It's a paradox in a sense. Explain the... Fantastic. Thanks for the cue. Yeah. It's great. Very good. The question is, can you explain the laws of consciousness? And that's indeed what this session is about. It's what this session is about. So let's look now at how the laws of consciousness, the spiritual laws, actually work. And if you think about it, we all live in societies. And in every society, we elect people to do what? Apparently, we elect people to make laws. Every country has its own laws. And we elect people to create, to make and enforce those laws. Why do we do that? Why do we need those laws? Why do we need those people to make those laws? Control. Yes, to control. It's to control the behavior of people in society. And it's justified by saying that we need to control people's behavior, otherwise there would be chaos. So it's to maintain order and harmony. We create laws to maintain order and harmony in society. Okay. If you break a law, what happens? You are punished. In other words, you are delivered with some suffering. You will be locked in a room, you will be incarcerated, which is seen as a way of suffering, which is otherwise known as punishment. You are punished for breaking the law, and you will suffer. Unless you're very enlightened, and 10 years in solitary confinement becomes a long yoga bhati. And so let's look at physical laws. What's the physical law that keeps you in your seat right now? The law of gravity. And if you thought you could break that law and you went to the top of the building and you went, hey, I can fly, what would you experience in 2 seconds? A lot of pain. You would suffer. So now we see the correlation between if you try to break a law, you always experience suffering or pain. Pain or suffering. Do you see the two of you? As soon as you try and break any law, natural law, man-made law, then you will suffer. So suffering is a sign that you're trying to break a law. Okay, so I'm going to not be a very good artist, and I'd like you to imagine that that's a piece of coal. It's a piece of coal. And you know what a piece of coal looks like. It looks dark, dirty, dusty, very rough around the edges, and it's very fragile. Dark, dusty, rough, and fragile. This is coal. And actually, it's carbon. And over time, certain laws will have an effect on this piece of carbon over time. And two particular laws, the law of gravity, which really means pressure. The law of gravity will apply some pressure to the carbon, and The other law is the second law of thermodynamics. I'm not going to go into a physics class, but the second law of thermodynamics, which really means heat exchange, will have an effect on the way the carbon in the coal is structured. So these natural laws in the environment over time will have an effect of transforming this piece of coal into a diamond. Actually, no, they won't. It's a myth that coal becomes diamond. It's a myth. It's a very well perpetrated myth, because it's too big a jump. But what they have in common is carbon. And some carbon ends up as coal, and some carbon, when it is affected by the law of gravity and the law of thermodynamics, very deep in the ground, comes up as diamonds. It comes up as diamonds. So these laws have two effects, a little effect for coal and a big effect in the creation of a diamond. And you know that a diamond is sharp, transparent, the hardest material on the planet, with the ability to split light, white light, into 7 different rays. Now, question. Would you say your consciousness is more like a piece of coal or a diamond? Be honest. Is your consciousness more like a piece of coal or more like a diamond? Now, if I'm honest, my consciousness, coal. Sorry? Half-half. Okay, you want to walk the middle road, the middle path. I understand. But when I arrived, my consciousness, coal. Rough, I'm delicate, dusty, dirty, lots of kind of funny images and thoughts over which I have no control, flying off, the dust flying off my consciousness with no control. And so gradually I'm in the process of transforming the carbon from coal to diamond. And that over time, in the physical world, these two laws have an effect on the carbon and they create a diamond. So I'm just using this as a metaphor, because in your consciousness, there are laws which are in the process of transforming your consciousness from a coal-like state to a diamond-like state. And these laws, well, let's have a bit of fun. Let's have a bit of fun. I need my two volunteers again to hand out these bits of paper, if that's okay. Yeah, do we have our two volunteers? So one doing the right hand side and one doing the left, if that's okay. Just hand a little pile at the end of the row. Little pile at the end of the row. No, excuse me. You go up the, and so you do the right and you do the left. If you do the left. Okay. Okay. It's great. Fantastic. Thank you. Whoops. Brother, can I just take one? Just give me one. Just need one. Sorry, I forgot to take one for myself. You got enough? Thanks. It's great. We have some spares here. Anyone not got one? Anyone still waiting for one? It's done here. And then a few there. Fantastic. Good. So, I've highlighted here the 7 spiritual laws. The main ones, basically. If you go down the left-hand column, you might want to, if you're translating, scribble the law of time. Number 1, the law of time. Now, when you're in harmony with each of these laws, you will have a certain state of awareness. When you're in harmony with each of these laws, you will have a certain state of awareness. For example, when you're in harmony with the law of time, what would be your awareness? When you're in harmony with the law of time, the passing of time, time passes, and so what would be your awareness as a spiritual being? You would be aware of your, think of time, think of consciousness, think of the soul, in the context of time, you would be aware of your eternity. When you're in harmony with the law of time, you would be aware of your own eternity, your timelessness. You would be able to watch time passing, but still be aware that you don't pass. You are not affected by the changing time. Number two, the law of purpose. When you're aware, when you're in harmony with the law of purpose, in other words, the purpose of your life, you would be aware of what? We did this on the first morning. You would be aware that you are here to do what? To create. Yeah, to create. Not painting, not poetry, not that kind of create, but to manifest life, to create your life here in this material world. So when you're in harmony with the law of purpose, you would be aware that your purpose, what you're here to do, is to create, to be creative. And you see that? So now, with your partner, just the person next to you, when you're in harmony with the law of identity, what would you be aware of? When you're in harmony with the law of silence, what would you be aware of? When you're in harmony with the law of love, what would you be aware of in your consciousness? Conversation with your partner and see if you can see if you can intuition, see if you can sense deep within yourself what you're aware of when you're in harmony with these spiritual laws. Yeah? And see what comes up.
It's good. Okay. Let's see how you're doing. It's actually an exercise which is better done on your own, in a sense, because I have to sense deeply, you know, and of course the meaning of the words and where they're pointing is a personal thing too. But let's do the law of identity. When you are in harmony with the law of identity, what are you aware of? Be aware of your existence, your immortality, your sense of self as soul, which really means, as we've discovered, no one. Because when you're soul conscious, zero. Because when you're soul conscious, you're not thinking, I am a soul, are you? Are you thinking that? Or are you just being that? So it's just the awareness of being. Yeah, being, that's it. Wow. And then the law of silence. When you're in harmony with the law of silence, what are you aware of? You're aware of your tremendous power, your tremendous unlimited powerfulness. When you're in harmony with the law of silence, you are aware of your power. Yeah. It's not you're thinking, oh, I'm so powerful. You're not thinking it. It's just an awareness of your powerfulness. It's not
compared to anything else. It's not measurable. It's just an awareness that you have. You're a very powerful entity. Law of love. When you're in harmony with the law of love, aware of opposite of attachment? No. Acceptance is a behavior that comes from love. What's the awareness? Everybody is not just equal, everybody is everything, and everybody is one. Connected. Connection. Love is the energy of connection. So when you have that awareness, then you sense the interconnection between everyone and everything. This is the story of the mystics. You know, you sometimes read of the mystical experience. They spend 20 years in meditation, and then one day they're walking down by the side of the river, and suddenly, for no reason, it's as if their consciousness goes up and they just sense the oneness. Incredible oneness of everything, everything in time and space. It's all one. Think about Baba's consciousness. What he is aware of as he is aware of our journey, our drama. He just sees the whole thing as one in a second. He doesn't go, well, there's a little scene here, a little scene there, they're having a little scene there, they're having a little scene. No, he just, everything. He holds everything as one. Beautiful. Wow. And then the law of peace. When you're in harmony with the law of peace, you're aware of your the mother of peace. Purity. The purity of your consciousness. The purity of yourself. You're aware of your utter purity. There's nothing in there which is shaking or diluting your purity. Yeah. And then the law of happiness. When you are in harmony with the law of happiness, then you're aware of your my favorite. You know, you see the birds flying in the evening? The little freedom, yeah, they're flying, they're squealing with delight. They're so happy because they're so free and they fly. So you're aware of your freedom. Freedom and happiness, like brother and sister. So, in your country, you live in a state, and the state creates laws for its people. Whereas in your consciousness, you create your state. And your state is the law. You see? And this is the origin of all law. The origin of all law. Because you lose, we lose our ability to create these states, then chaos begins. Karma, attachment, ego. Karma, attachment, and ego in society means we have to create state laws, because the state of our being is no longer according to the natural law. So now, what do we do as we attempt to break these laws? For example, the law of time. When you're in harmony with the law of time, you're aware of your timelessness, your eternity. So what do we do every day, which is a sign that I'm trying to break the law? Try to control time. What do you do? What do you do? What do you look at more often than other people? You look at your watch. You look at the time. And when you're looking at your watch, you believe you are looking at time. But you're not. You're just looking at a machine. Yeah? And you become very time-passing conscious. Is that right? Because the ego says, hurry, there might not be enough time. Or if we do it quickly, we will save time. If we leave it till later, there will be more time. That's what the ego says, isn't it? And so, how do you feel? What are the emotions that you create that you feel? You feel rushed, panicky, anxious. Is that right? Is that what we feel? I think so. Stressed. Feel very stressed. And so those emotions are the signal that I'm trying to break a natural law. They're the suffering. They're the punishment for trying to break a natural law. Do you see it? So let's do the law of purpose, which means when you're in harmony of the law of purpose, you're aware that you're here to create, of your creative potential. So what do you do every day which is a signal of your attempt to break this law? Well, it is kind of like the same thing. We consume the creativity of others. What do most people do when they get home at night? Switch on the, or pick up a, or go and watch the, it's called entertainment. In other words, we consume the creativity of others. And as long as I'm consuming the creativity of others, I'm not being creative myself. We don't just consume the creativity, but we bow down in front of it. And we go, wow. And we become impressed. Because the ego says, this little voice inside it says, wow, I could never do that. I can't be creative. I can't be a creator. I'm not good enough to do something creative. Do you see it? And then how do you feel inside? How do we feel? What's the feeling? We feel a little helpless. We feel inadequate. We feel low self-worth. I'm not worthy. I'm not, incapable. So we have these feelings coming up from inside. You know, because I'm trying to break a natural law of consciousness, which says you are incredibly creative, and it's your purpose. Your purpose is to be, not create movies. Well, you can if you want to, but each one of us has this creative purpose. Yes. How do you feel when you try to break the law of time? Stressed, yeah. Rushed, panicked. Yeah, because the ego says, hurry up, quick. Because there's an attachment to a certain outcome by a certain time in corporeal time. And then I forget my own eternity. I forget I have all the time in all the worlds. We look at the watch, we think, oh, that's the time. No, it's not. Time does not appear on a watch. It's a way of measuring my experience of the passing of time, which is really the space between events. So we use the watch to synchronize. We agree that we'll be sitting at the table when the little hand points at 3 and the big hand points at 12. It's a convenient mutual agreement. That's all a watch is for. It's not measuring time, really. So do you want to do the rest yourself? The law of identity. What do you do every day? Little things. They're not deep things. Little behaviors which means you're trying to break the law of identity, and then the law of silence. What do you do all the time, almost all day, which means you're trying to break the law of silence? In other words, what do you do to diminish your powerfulness? Moments when you feel powerless. And then the law of love. What do you do that makes you lose your awareness of the wholeness, the oneness of everything? Do you want to do it? Just a little conversation again. See what you come up with. It's good to engage. This is a little bit more of a workshop. And then see what you can see. It's about seeing for yourself. Okay. Easy? Do you want to do a quick run through? So the law of identity, the awareness of yourself as being, just the being, just being. So what do you do every day which signals your attempt to break the law? Yeah, you identify with your form, which means you look in the mirror and then you start painting it. You start putting things on it. You start going, oh, I look so good. How am I looking? How am I doing? So you look in the mirror with the belief that you are what you see. And it's just this little moment. It's just like you look at your watch, all of time. You look in the mirror and you go, oh, that's nice. That's me. It's just little things like that that we do many times every day. And then what does the ego say? The ego says, I have to look good for other people. I have to make my appearance a certain way. The ego says, essentially, I am what I see reflected in the mirror. I am form. And what's the emotions that you feel that start rising up? Low self-esteem. Again, maybe inadequate. The emotion of sadness as you lose your physical looks. Oh, another gray hair. Oh, another wrinkle. These little moments. Yeah, all together. They're little one at a time, nothing. But all together over time, they accumulate. And suddenly, I'm feeling these emotions because the ego is attached to. This is me. And so I'm trying to break a natural law. And natural law is coming from your original true state. Do you get it? So the original true state is the law. Is the law of consciousness. Make sense? So the law of silence, you're aware of your power. What do you do many times every day, which means you're trying to break the law? In other words, silence and powerfulness, you think too much. What Daddy likes to call waste thoughts. Too many waste thoughts. Thinking about this, thinking about them, thinking about that. And because the ego says, I need to judge, I need to think about them, I need to have a little criticism of them, and I need to complain a little about them. So the ego says, they're wrong, they're bad, this is no good, that's terrible. Yeah, and how do you feel? How do you start feeling? You start feeling, oh God, tired. Yeah, this is tiring. This is wasting of energy, and you feel tired and also a bit frustrated. There'll be a little bit of frustration. Yeah, because these waste thoughts are an attempt to change what you can never change. Yeah, so I lose my power because I'm trying to break the law. So if I was in my natural state of power and there is the law of silence, I'd be able to walk through all my relationships and only think and speak when I am invited. And there's a principle in life: if you wait for the invitation, you will always be invited. You'll always get an invitation to participate. You'll always get an invitation. But most people have got a little voice saying, oh, I better say something. Oh, I haven't said anything. Oh, I need to say something here. And so they're not waiting for the invitation. They're interfering. Do you see it? And if you look at the world outside, everyone's interfering with everyone else. Next door neighbors are interfering with each other. Organizations are interfering with each other. Nations are interfering with each other. Everyone's interfering with everyone else. And you have chaos. Conflict and chaos. Whereas we're learning to walk through life, and I only need to respond if I'm invited. Yeah. You ask me a question, I'm invited to respond. I don't need to think about anything else. And again, this is why Daddy's always saying, stop thinking, don't think. No need to think about anything. Waste of energy. There's the law of love. What do we do every day which means we're trying to break the law of love? When you lose your sense of oneness, what do you do? Try to control sometimes, yeah? Kind of applies to all of them. You withdraw. You isolate yourself. You do Greta Garbo. Remember Greta Garbo? I need to be alone. I want to be alone. And so I separate. I separate myself, or I separate from others. And there's two reasons for separating. One reason is okay. If the reason for separating is to go deeply into myself, my meditation, my yoga, my introspection, that's okay, no problem. Because that's what I require to do to re-emerge these states, these laws. But if my reason for separating is, oh, I don't want to be with you, I don't want to connect with you, I don't want to connect with them, I want to disconnect from them, then those are the moments that I'm trying to break the natural law of connection. Love is connection. So then, what does the ego say? The ego says, well, I've already said it, really. I want to be alone. Or we are alone in this. There's us and them. Now, we don't talk to them. We have to look after us. All these moments we separate, we're better than them. These are the little voices of the ego. And the feeling is disconnected, loneliness, isolation, I'm on my own here, yeah, no one cares. You see that? And those are the symptoms, these are the signs that I'm trying to break a natural law. Yeah. Then the law of peace, which is the awareness of your purity. What do you do every day that is your attempt to break that law? Yeah. You imagine the flat, calm lake. A factory comes to the hill and starts producing, and all the effluent runs down the hill, goes into the water, and the water starts going, starts bubbling, and it becomes effervescent as it's polluted by the factory. So what is it that we do that pollutes the purity of our consciousness? We absorb negative images, ideas, switch on the TV, go to the movie, have conversations about other people's wrongdoings or whatever, we absorb that negative energy, and then it dilutes, pollutes the purity of our consciousness. Because the ego says, well, the little voice of the ego, they're bad, you're bad, you should change, don't like what you're doing. Yeah. Or it could be, I need to know what's going on in the world. I need to find out what's happening. So we consume the world. We consume what other people are doing. Because he who says you need to know. So we start feeding on the darker images of the world. And how do you feel? How do you feel? How do you feel? What are the signs, the symptoms, the feelings? Confusion? Agitation, you know, agitation of consciousness. I'm agitated. What's going on? What's happening? Yeah, peacelessness. Yeah, is that right? Your purity is gone. Agitated. What's happening? Why are they doing this? Why are they doing that? And so there's agitation. And then finally, the law of happiness or the law of contentment is your awareness of your freedom. And what do you do every day, which is a sign you're trying to break the law? This is the deepest, most frequent. You become attached. Whatever you get attached to, you become a slave to. Whatever I become attached to, I become a slave to. Wow. And when you're a slave, it means you're not free. And that's why attachment kills our natural state of happiness, of contentment. Any attachment whatsoever, for a moment, for a long time, I notice. And the ego says, I need that. The ego says, that's mine. That needs to belong to me. I want that. Or, when I get that, I'll be happy. See? I need to attach to that. That needs to be with me. It needs to be me. Yeah. And that's why every Saturday afternoon you have hundreds of thousands of egos going to watch their football team. Yeah. So they're going to make themselves very unhappy. And that's why you see a lot of unhappy faces. Excited faces sometimes, but essentially unhappy. The tension, oh my God, the fear, the worry. So what do you feel? What do you feel? What's the feeling when you're trying to break the law of freedom? You feel trapped. You feel trapped? Confined. Imprisoned. Enslaved. Those feelings come up. Yeah. Discontentment. A lot of discontentment. So do you see the sequence? You see the law, the awareness, the behavior, which means you're trying to break it, and you cannot break a law. You can attempt to break it, but you cannot fully ever break a law, ever. The law will prevail. Ultimately, it'll pull you back. You'll get so far, like a rocket tries to break the law of gravity, and it'll get so far, and it'll run out of fuel, and it will be pulled back down. Yeah. And so we're here because we're now so unhappy, because we've been trying to break all these laws so much, so often, we've suffered so much, there must be a solution. And here we are. That's why I'm here. That's why I came here. Yeah. And so this is why Baba says, we are the lawmakers, because we're restoring these states of consciousness, states of being, and when I'm in these states, the law is restored. These are the laws. We are remaking ourselves, and then from the self come the laws, come all other laws, all other laws. Fantastic. Shall we have a break for 10 minutes? Break? Toilet, water, fresh air, early lunch. Let's have a break. 10 minutes. Let's come back at 5 to 12, if that's okay. So the essence of that last session is the essence of I am. So if you want to remind yourself in a very simple way, without going through all these processes, although that's incredibly useful as you raise your awareness, is here is your primary spiritual characteristics. I am eternal. I am creator. I am the I that says I am. If you want to use the word soul, it's okay, or spirit, or I am consciousness, full stop. Find your own way to articulate what cannot really be articulated, because it's prior to words and descriptions. I am power. I am connected. I am connected. I am connected. Or if you want to say, I am aware of the oneness, the wholeness of everything. I am pure. Some people say, I am purity. I am free. I am free. So little affirmations that you can use to kind of profile yourself, and then notice when you are not being yourself. And the reason we're not being ourselves is because there's only one thing in the way, and that's our old friend, the ego. It's good. So, final part of our workshop together is, has everybody got that? Is everybody okay with that? Can I use a fresh page? Okay. So, tell me the Mary Adas. Tell me the Mary Adas. The Mariadas. Number one, the big one, the most celibacy. Number two is diet. Is that right? What else? Be celibate, vegetarian diet. Company, keep good company. Company. What else? Be of service, serve others. Is that right? Is that a Mariada? Be of service. Study. Study. Amrit Vela. Amrit Vela. And remembrance. Is that right? Remember God. Let's put remembrance up. Remembrance. Okay, that's enough. Now, your challenge is to answer the question, which of these basically instructions is designed to restore which law? Now you've got the laws. Now which of these instructions, behaviors really, they're kind of behaviors. They're at the surface. The behavior is what we're doing. But which behavior is going to help you restore which of those laws that we just identified? You understand? Do you get what I'm saying? In other words, celibacy. So why are we celibate? Because it's going to help restore the law of purity and love. Love. Yeah, I think so. Because when I'm not celibate, then I'm trying to break the law of love, which means I'm trying to separate out. I'm trying to separate someone away from the herd and capture them. Is that right? And use them for my own pleasure, egotistical pleasure, Do you see the question? So you're looking at each one of the behaviors and you're asking, now which of the laws is each one of these instructions, because that's really what they are, guidelines, are these guidelines designed to help restore? Which law is each one designed to help restore to my consciousness, to me, to me? Little conversation, see if you can marry the law to the Mariada. Marry the law, might be one or two laws for each one. Marry the law to the Mariada. It's good. Are you seeing the connections? Is it making sense? You're getting the... And some of them there's more than one, yes. Sorry? The majority? The guidelines. Service, Amrit Vela. Yeah, rise at 4 for meditation. I think it's on the Mariada's list. Think, is that right? I always thought it was. Yeah. And keep good company. Live a pure celibate life. Is that right? Don't do business at the center. Haven't put that one up. But these are the guidelines, the behaviors that we encounter when we come. Is that right? Yeah. And so all I'm trying to help you to see is, if you came to do your Raj Yoga course, when you set out on your spiritual journey, and someone said to you, now these are the laws, this is how you break the law, and this is because of the ego, and this is how you feel, you could be go, what? I mean, some of you in these 3 days, you're going, what? This is all too complicated. So if someone tried to explain this to you, you go, what? I don't get it. So when you encounter the first step of your return journey, it comes very simply as guidelines to what to do, behavior, things to do. Now, as you know, after a little while, many people go, why am I getting up at 4? And why am I eating a pure diet? Why do I really have to be celibate? Can I not and also have a spiritual life? And many people go through that because they don't see the deeper reason for the guidelines. The guidelines are just kind of surface behaviors, but the more you practice the guidelines, follow the Mariadas, then you begin to see all they are doing is restoring my state of being, restoring my natural state of being. That's what they're designed to do. It's just that if someone explained that to you to begin with, you'd go, what? I don't understand. And that's why it's useful just to see the connection. Which one of these instructions, guidelines, is designed to restore that state of being, state of consciousness, vibration of consciousness to you? And in some there's more than one law that it connects to at a deeper level. Yeah, makes sense? So play, have fun, explore, churn, and see if you can see for yourself. Because this is just me sharing how I've unraveled, unpacked, understood what I'm doing on my spiritual journey. But we each have to find our own way to do that. Otherwise, it's not spirituality, it's just another religion. Yes? So, do you have a piece of paper? Piece of paper, blank page of paper, and I'm going to ask you to reflect now, to reflect. First question, just write down your answer to the first question. As you look back on these 3 days, what have been the two most important ideas, insights, aha moments, realizations? What have been the two most important ideas? Maybe you've had some, now I see. Just write down the two most important, or two aha moments, two realizations, as you look back on these 2 days, 3 days. And then the second question, is what's still not clear for you? What's kind of still grey? Yeah, that was interesting. I didn't quite understand that. In what area would that be in? What area do you still not quite understand? Or is most sort of mystifying? Yeah, what would you like to know more about? Like to understand more deeply? In what area would that be in? Yeah, that was interesting, but I didn't really understand it. In what area would that be in for you? Further understanding required. And then the third, final question. Vision. Let's finish with what we started with a little vision, the idea of vision. What do you see yourself doing differently when you get home? What do you see yourself doing differently? What's the picture you have in your mind, in maybe home or work or somewhere? What do you see yourself doing, saying, thinking differently? Probably action, behavior. What behavior do you see being different? Do you have a picture of that in your mind? Your mind's eye, the screen of the mind. Great. And then with one other person next to you, or two if you like, one or two other people, just share what you've written down and compare notes. See if you've got anything in common with your neighbor about what you took away, what you're going to do. And it's just good to articulate for a moment what worked for you or what didn't. Do you want to do that for 3-4 minutes? Just for 3-4 minutes each? Okay, let's do 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Fantastic. It's good. So, I think there's probably more questions than there are answers around this subject in many ways. So what I'd like to do is invite you to contemplate the journey we've been on, and then if you have any specific questions, I'm around afterwards if anyone wants to talk, but if you'd like to send that question to me, then I'd be very happy to answer it, if that is okay. And so I'm going to ask you, if you want, it's up to you, is to leave your email address. And what I will do is I'll send you 1-page summary of the 3 days, just a very brief summary, and that will refresh it, maybe in a week's time when you can read it, and it'll bring it back. And then when you have your question, you will get my email when I send it to you. You can send me your question. And in reality, not many people do, but I'd be interested to see how many do. And then I'm happy to answer it. I think these 3 days have been recorded. They're on CD, but I'm not quite sure when. Celia, are you going to? Okay, in a minute. Celia will tell you. And then in about a month's time, there'll be a book by the title, What's in the Way is the Way. So that book will be available as a more complete, but that'll be about a month, 6 weeks' time. And then if I have your email, I can let you know when and where that will be available, if that's okay. Is that okay? Does that work okay? And then you have something to follow up with to continue the momentum. Because always the challenge with courses and trainings is, how do I continue the momentum that we begin? So one page summary in a week or 12 days, then a book in a month or 6 weeks, and then any questions, very happy to respond. Just one question came in a few minutes ago, is how do I deal with ambition? How do I deal with being motivated by an aim? Most people are ambitious. They have aims, they have desires which motivate them. And how do I maintain my motivation if I have no attachment, no aim, no desires? How do I maintain my motivation? It's a great question. And many people in the world outside ask this question, especially when we do this together. Because what I've shared with you in the past 3 days, I also do the same equivalent in organizations. And people understand, they get it. They understand the ego, emotion, they get it. But one big question is, what happens to my motivation? And the answer is that most people are motivated by wanting to get something, to achieve something, which is the same as get something, to achieve the aim, the goal, the position, the prosperity in financial terms. Most people are motivated by that. They get out of bed in the morning to go and get something. And that's why most people experience tiredness, stress, and eventually burnout. Because people are trying to achieve faster and faster, more and more, faster and faster, more and more, faster and faster. So what we're doing here is we're reversing the energy from wanting to get something to being available to give something. And that's why the fourth practice of service, seva, contribution, is designed to help each one of us reverse the intention of our life, the programmed intention to get, to achieve, to acquire. So service gives us the chance to make the energy go in the other direction, which is the natural direction. It's not our nature to try and bring the world to us. It's our nature to give to the world. And when you start doing that, as many of you already know, when you do that with the intention to give, it is the most empowering process. And what comes through? I think something called enthusiasm is restored. And that's why when you watch most people in the world who are ambitious to achieve, they get out of bed in the morning with their first thought, I have to go to work. Because they've got to go and get something. Whereas when you get out of bed in the morning, you don't say you have to go to Amrit Vela, you have to go to class, do you? You say, I want to get out there. I want. Yes? This means yes, this means no. Yeah, just say yes. Yes. Because you've rediscovered the enthusiasm that comes with the intention to be of service. Just different energy altogether. If you haven't tasted that yet, then when you get back to your center, make yourself available. That's my mantra. It's my mantra. I'm available. Make yourself available and watch the energy completely change. Yeah, from tiredness to grumpiness, I have to an enthusiasm that says, yeah, I want to do this. This is motivating me. And then you're motivated not from outside in, but from inside out. Then you've done your Mandela trick. Because he went to prison because he wanted something on the outside. He came out of prison and was totally of service to the world. He was available. Everybody wanted to be seen with him, and he lived his life from inside out. It's just a great example for us all, apart from Daddy Janky. It's nice to have someone different. So if you'd like to leave your email, and if you don't have to, it's not compulsory, if you'd like to have that follow-up, and then I'll hand over to Celia, and then I think we'll have a meditation, and then it's lunch. It's great.
So on behalf of everyone, we'd like to say a very, very big thank you for Brother Mike for so willingly, enthusiastically, I don't know what words to say, sharing with us his churnings, his insights, his wisdom. So thank you very much.
Okay, should we just finish with one moment of silence together? Should we do that as is the way here? Just to take a second, and then you are free. That's good. So just once again, a good time to put all those ideas and insights to one side. They're there for future churning, exploration. I just come back to myself, to be myself again. No need to think about anything. Everything is okay. I remind myself of who I am. The I that says I am. I become aware of my true state of being as peace, and as I feel that peace, I know myself as a source of love, and yet I feel so free. Everything in this world comes and goes. People, objects, opportunities, circumstances, all come to pass. Even in my inner world, everything comes and goes. Thoughts, emotions, memories, all come to pass. And yet, I remain the one that never goes. Watching, just watching, and as I watch, I am still, silent and still. Silent, so still. That's great. Thank you.